You were junior minister back in 1990, 1991, when the tall ships idea came about. You seemed quite a champion of the idea of bringing such a big event to Belfast. It was the first big event of that type to kind of bring people back into the city centre. And I was just kind of wondering about the background to it and your involvement and why you saw it as a good thing.
Well, because after we had the plan for the regeneration of Belfast, which had been going on since 1985 when I first became Minister for the Environment, and the idea of which I'd inherited from my predecessor, Chris Patten, and we'd worked it up over a period of years to get the city centre to redevelop and make it into a modern, exciting, well-designed centre where everybody could come and enjoy themselves and work. In fact, I used to say, my line used to be, we can get everybody to come and work in the city centre, shop in the city centre, eat in the city centre, and then go home and make love to each other. So it was to create a place of hope and expectation and quality and to give people a feeling of pride in their city, which, you know, went back 100 years to the incredible city that Belfast was in the Victorian era. So that was the strategic concept. And about 1989, we came up with the idea that we should have a sort of culminating event to celebrate the rebirth of Belfast. And the tall ships was obviously the best, or one of the very best opportunities that we could have to sort of internationalize what we're doing, and to also make something which would be totally cross-community and cross-sectarian and also bring the fact to the eyes of the world that Belfast was actually now a much more normal, happy and successful place than it had been. So that's where the idea of the tall ships came from. And then we set up a committee and under the chairmanship of a fellow called, oh my God, Ivan, oh, I think of his name, and Robin Dixon. And Hugh O'Neill, and it was serviced by my former private secretary, Aileen Porter, who became Aileen Gore. The problem was that the tall ships were a bit dubious about coming. And it just so happened, out of sheer fortune, that the president of the Association of Tall Ships was a man called Lord Burnham. And he was a cousin of mine, through my mother. And I got my mother, it was the Jewish side of my family. Lord Burnham, there was a very famous Jewish family called Lawson. In fact, they founded the Daily Telegraph. And Harry Burnham was the sort of rather dull but worthy sort of Lord Burnham. And my mother rang him up and said, "You've got to see my son. He wants to talk to you about the tall ships." So I went to see him. And he said, "What on earth do we want to go to Belfast? So we'll all get killed." So I said, "No, you won't." And I explained it all to him. And he said, "Well," he said, "Richard, blood's thicker than water." He said, "I'll see what I can do." So I'm not saying that was one bit of it, of course, probably not the most important bit, but it was a small part of it. So that was the idea behind it. And then it was to have the tall ships as a culmination of a festival year for Belfast. And the idea of the festival year was not only the tall ships, which was obviously a culmination of the whole thing, but also in terms of the Belfast Festival, in terms of local things in all the various communities in Belfast, putting on their own shows, their own festivals, their own plays, their own musicals, their own events in a way which would attract all sides to come together.
Was there much pushback from the people organising it to say, "Whoa, you can't do that. Belfast's not ready for that volume or that kind of the security around that kind of event"?
No, I don't think that. I know there wasn't. I think everybody, because it was built on what was happening over a series of years, and everybody could see that there was I mean, my point was, I said I wanted to have a party for a year. I wanted Belfast to have a party for a year to celebrate Belfast's cultural and ethnic and religious and political and every sort of difference, but to do it in a way in which they could all find a place which was neutral ground which they could come together. And so there wasn't really any pushback about, I mean, obviously there were security concerns about it, but that was true in Northern Ireland, full stop. In fact, when the tall ships got going, the policemen in the harbour, took off their jackets.
Mm-hmm.
It was an extraordinary thing. And I watched it from the north down side of the river, and you could see the people coming down the Shancor and coming down the falls and coming down the ground, all from the markets, all pouring into it. It was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. It was a beautiful 4 days, so the weather was perfect.
So I was a child, and I remember it was the first time I'd ever been in the docks and kind of going down, so it I can still remember how undeveloped, in a sense, it was compared to today.
Well, that was the other point, you're right. The other point, one of the other points was to underline the opportunity that the whole dock area presented for redevelopment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had already got plans in embryo at that stage as to what to do with the Titanic dock. I mean, we were already thinking about how we could have some form of museum there for Titanic. So it was part of a sort of continuing strategy. And it was a big success, one of the few I've had in my life. We had some wonderful people involved with it. I mean, everybody was, both from the civil service side, from the city side, from the council, from the business community, from social groups. And by the end of it, what was really exciting was that the local groups on the ground in the most deprived areas of Belfast were starting to become enthusiastic about the concept of doing things locally through the action teams and people like Jackie Redpath and Father Miles Kavanagh. I wrote it up in my book, actually, Battling for Peace. There's quite a long bit in there about it.
Is it one of the standout moments of your time serving in Northern Ireland?
Yes, absolutely. Probably the standout at the moment, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was, you know, it just took people back. It gave people, could see that Belfast was, you know, on the way back.
I mean, when you look at the regeneration that you'd thought about at that stage and then you look at it now...
I'm worried about it now. I'm very worried about it now. I think it's starting to miss out on all sorts of fantastic opportunities. I mean, for example, I recently gave a lecture at the University of Ulster on comparing Bristol and Belfast.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always, because I was MP for Chippenham, which is very near Bristol, and I always compared Bristol and Belfast. They're very similar cities in history and background and size and everything else. And just to give you one figure, Bristol now has half the number of kids on free school meals that Belfast has. So that gives you an indication of the difference in wealth between the two cities. And Bristol is now one of the most exciting, forward-looking, smart cities of the 21st century. And Belfast is hobbling along behind, long way behind. And that's because not because it's got people who are clever and enthusiastic within the city council, but it doesn't have a government. And it has layers and layers of administration. You know, you've got the MPs, you've got the executive, you've got the council, you've got the councils around, you've got, you know, what Belfast requires, in my view, the Belfast area, it needs a metropolitan mayor, which is quite difficult, actually, because of the problems of power sharing. But you could do it. You need somebody who's with a cabinet who has major responsibility for the sort of... Belfast should be the sort of part of the northern powerhouse. You know, if you look now what's happening in places like Leeds and Glasgow and Bristol and Manchester, you know, Belfast is in real danger of being left behind. Although, having said that, you know, it's still an incredible city. It's still got wonderful life and vitality. It's got very bright young people, but it needs real imagination. You know, Belfast should be thinking of having a 3D manufacturing centre, becoming a centre of 3-4G manufacturing, for example. There are all sorts of ideas that Belfast should be thinking about because it's got a critical size, which is large enough to make it a great success. And it's got all the sort of services and infrastructure that a city needs to be a world-class city. And Belfast should be aiming to become a world-class city. But if it doesn't have the right imagination and leadership, it's very difficult to see how that's going to happen.
And at the moment, with that kind of vacuum of leadership, with the Assembly and the Executive stood down, do you think that the kind of Northern Ireland office and direct rule, is that a suitable replacement or a good idea at the moment?
Absolutely not. Because if you tried to get direct rule, they wouldn't do anything. You know, be frightened of upsetting anybody, so they wouldn't do anything. I don't think that's the solution at all. I think Brexit is an utter disaster. It's a disaster more for Ireland, the island of Ireland, than it is for the English. But I mean, it's the English have shot themselves in every part of their anatomy, and they're going to have to live with the consequences. But it's not good news. And of course, the politicians in Northern Ireland are playing the party politics, and that does not help the economic social development of the city. Well, it's easy for me to say that because I'm not a politician in Northern Ireland, but that's the reality. So, I'm concerned, as I said.